Hi, this is Hugh Cornwell, and welcome to this Mr. DeMille FM podcast. If you have any comments, suggestions, or simply want to get in touch, then please email info@mrdemillefm.com. This show looks at the life of actor Al Lettieri and his short but memorable career. I hope you enjoy the show. Who threatened Steve McQueen, Charles Bronson, John Wayne, and even Marlon Brando? Who was the meanest, nastiest, most intimidating character ever to grace the silver screen? It was Al Lettieri. He just looked like he meant it. Someone you don't argue with, ever. The unforgettable heavy. It took quite a while for the film world to wake up to this obvious fact, and sadly, the result is a slender body of work he has left behind. He was born Alfredo Lettieri in the West Village area of New York City in 1928, and his brother-in-law was a bona fide mafia member, Pasquale Eboli, whose brother was an actual crime boss, Thomas Eboli, in the Gambino family. He spoke fluent Italian and made his debut on television in various series, including an episode of Perry Mason in 1958. He was a late starter and was already almost 30 when he got into TV. He got his first big break in Don Siegel's The Hanged Man in 1964, starring Robert Culp, Edmund O'Brien and Vera Miles. It's a remake of Ride the Pink Horse from 1947, and Siegel did a good job, moving the action to New Orleans during Mardi Gras, but Al had an uncredited role as O'Brien's heavy. It was only the second made-for-TV film ever made. Siegel's earlier film, The Killers, started out as a made-for-TV movie, but when it was finished, it was deemed too violent for TV. Siegel was lucky to get Stan Getz and Astrid Gilberto performing the girl from Ipanema in the film.
The girl from Ipanema goes walking, and when she passes, it when she passes goes ah. When she walks, she's like a samba that swings so cool and sways so gently, that when she passes, it when she passes goes ah. She walks to the sea, she looks straight ahead, not at him. Tall and thin and young and lovely, the girl from Ipanema goes walking, and when she passes, he smiles, but she doesn't see.
The following year, 1965, Al got a credited role as a bartender in the closing minutes of Wild Seed, Brian G. Hutton's first feature, starring Michael Parks, about a young drifter who meets a girl travelling to LA on the road and helps her get there. This is a great little picture, and the two leads are very good. The same year, he also appeared in Dark Intruder, playing a police sergeant in a period piece set in San Francisco about an investigation into a string of occult murders. It was originally shot as a pilot for a TV series by Alfred Hitchcock's production company to replace the Alfred Hitchcock Hour, which was due to finish that year. None of the networks picked it up, and so it was expanded to be a feature film. He then turned up in two Peter Sellers movies, After the Fox and The Bobo, both shot in Europe, but was only credited in the second one. Sellers was at the top of the tree at this time and married to Britt Eklund to boot, although things weren't going too well between them by this time. Adele didn't have any acting jobs for a couple of years, and next had a small role and also was executive producer on a Marlon Brando film, Night of the Following Day, co-starring Richard Boone and Rita Moreno in 1967. It was the tale of a kidnapping that goes wrong, and Pamela Franklin plays the unfortunate girl who is kidnapped and has to deal with a particularly nasty Richard Boone, in a role Lettieri himself would have been very good in. Not a bad film, but it was too arty to be a hit. Around this time, he was approached to write a treatment for a film called Villain, doubtless in the knowledge that he had real-life crime connections. It was based upon the novel Burden of Proof by James Barlow, based upon the real-life UK gangster Ronnie Cray. His treatment was then turned into a screenplay by Dick Clement and Ian Lefrenet, who were well-known in the UK but for their comedy writing. Elliot Kastner was producer, and it was originally to star Darren Nesbitt, a talented British actor known for his portrayals of English gangsters. Unfortunately for Nesbitt, Richard Burton was looking for a picture at the time and got the role instead, which suddenly turned it into an A-list film. It didn't fare well at the box office, even though scenes of Richard Burton's character's bisexuality, namely kissing Ian McShane, were edited out. Burton had never played such a role before and was disappointed at the film's lack of success in America. Al got a part in a star-studded English spaghetti western, A Town Called Hell, with Telly Savalas, Robert Shaw, Martin Landau, Fernando Rey and Stella Stevens. The film suffers from having far too many plot threads for its own good, and Robert Shaw is dreadfully miscast, but it's interesting to see all the cast members together in a film. It was directed by Robert Parrish, who first worked in the film business firing peas at Charlie Chaplin on the set of City Lights when he was a schoolboy in 1930.
Well, in 1814 we took a little trip along with Colonel Jackson down the mighty Mississippi. We took a little bacon and we took a little beans, and we met the bloody British near the town of New Orleans. We fired our guns and the British kept a-coming, but there wasn't nigh as many as there was a while ago. We fired once more and they began to running on down the Mississippi to the Gulf of Mexico. Well, I seen Mars Jackson a-walking down the street and a-talking to a pirate by the name of Gene Lafitte. He gave Gene a drink that he brung from Tennessee, and the pirate said he'd help us drive the British in the sea. The French told Andrew, you'd better run, for Pakenham's a-coming with a bullet in his gun. Old Hickory said he didn't give a damn, he's a-gonna whip the britches off of Colonel Pakenham. We fired our guns and the British kept a-coming, but there wasn't nigh as many as there was a while ago. We fired once more and they began to running on down the Mississippi to the Gulf of Mexico. Well, we looked down the river and we see the British come, and there must have been 100 of them beating on the drum. They stepped so high and they made their bugles ring, while we stood beside our cotton bales, didn't say a thing. Old Hickory said we'd take them by surprise, if we didn't fire a musket, then we looked them in the eyes. We held our fire till we see their faces well, then we opened up our squirrel guns and really gave them hell. We fired our guns and the British kept a-coming, but there wasn't nigh as many as there was a while ago. We fired once more and they began to run it on down the Mississippi to the Gulf of Mexico. Well, they ran through the briars and they ran through the brambles and they ran through the bushes where a rabbit couldn't go. They ran so fast that the hounds couldn't catch them on down the Mississippi to the Gulf of Mexico. Well, we fired our cannon till the barrel melted down, so we grabbed alligator and we fought another round. We filled his head with many balls and powdered his behind, and when we touched the powder off, the gator lost his mind. They lost their pants and their pretty shiny coats, and their tails were all a-showing like a bunch of billy goats. They run down the river with their tongues a-hanging out, and they said they got a licking, which there wasn't any doubt. We fired our guns and the British kept a-coming, but there wasn't nigh as many as there was a while ago. We fired once more and they began to run it on down the Mississippi to the Gulf of Mexico. Well, we marched back to town in our dirty ragged pants, and we danced all night with them pretty girls from France. We couldn't understand them, but they had the sweetest charms, and we understood them better when we got them in our arms. The guide who brung the British from the sea came a-limping into camp just as sick as he could be. He said the dying words of the Colonel Pakenham was, you better quit your fooling with your cousin Uncle Sam. We fired our guns and the British kept a-coming, but there wasn't nigh as many as there was a while ago. We fired once more and they began to running on down the Mississippi to the Gulf of Mexico. Well, we'll march back home, but we'll never be content till we make Old Hickory the people's president. And every time we think about the bacon and the beans, we'll think about the fun we had way down in New Orleans. We fired our guns and the British kept a-coming, but there wasn't nigh as many as there was a while ago. We fired once more and they began to running on down the Mississippi to the Gulf of Mexico. Well, they ran through the briars and they ran through the brambles and they ran through the bushes where a rabbit couldn't go. They ran so fast that the hounds couldn't catch them on down the Mississippi to the Gulf of Mexico. Fired our guns and the British kept a-coming, but there wasn't nigh as many as there was a while ago. We fired once more and they began to running on down the Mississippi to the Gulf of Mexico.
Al was next cast in The Godfather as Virgil the Turk Sollozzo, which ignited his career. He had become friends with Marlon Brando when Brando was preparing for On the Waterfront back in 1953, and they had worked together in Night of the Following Day. Brando said he based much of his acting in both pictures upon Al, which is quite a claim, as Brando got Oscars for both roles. During the shoot of The Godfather, various cast members had meals at Lettieri's family's home, providing real-life experience of crime syndicate life. Francis Ford Coppola had this to say of Al Lettieri's performance in The Godfather. "I feel that the unsung hero in this, and someone who passed away, was the villain. Because if you have a good villain, someone who you take seriously, and I think that Virgil Sollozzo, played by Al Lettieri, is one of the best, that makes the whole story work better." It's understandable that Al's performance in The Godfather was overshadowed by all the other great performances. There were 9 Oscar nominations in the acting category alone. But now he was on his way. The door had been opened. Pulp, in 1972, had him following Michael Caine, who plays a writer employed to write the biography of an aging gangster, played by Mickey Rooney. Written and directed by Mike Hodges, it underused Al's talents. But that same year, he was in the outstanding The Getaway, Sam Peckinpah's classic action film based on a Jim Thompson novel, written by Walter Hill. Steve McQueen heads for Mexico with Ally McGraw after a botched heist, and Rudy Butler, played by Al, is sent after him. The score was by Quincy Jones, and this is one hell of a film. The following year, he made three movies. The Don Is Dead was directed by Richard Fleischer, with an outstanding Frederick Forrest, showing a chain of events unleashed when the mistress of a mob boss, played by Anthony Quinn, is raped. Horowitz in Dublin starred Harvey Lembeck, playing an American detective in Dublin attending a funeral and being dragged into a murder investigation. Al goes to town in this. There's a high body count, including one in the first few minutes. Cyril and Sinead Cusack also star, and it's pretty good, although let down by a lame score. The Deadly Trackers was a western based on a Sam Fuller story, in which Richard Harris, a sheriff, seeks revenge for the death of his wife and son. Al plays a Mexican policeman who is also after the same killer, played well by Rod Taylor. Thank you. In 1974, Lettieri was pitted against two more of the biggest names in the business, John Wayne and Charles Bronson. McHugh has Wayne as a Seattle cop getting mixed up in a corrupt police force, with Al playing a drug kingpin. It was originally meant for Steve McQueen and was heavily rewritten for John Wayne, which is perhaps why it doesn't seem comfortable. Far more satisfying is Mr. Majestic, in which Charles Bronson plays a melon farmer who gets involved in local politics and unwittingly liberates a dangerous criminal from jail, Frank Render, played by Al. It's based on an Elmore Leonard book, and Richard Fleischer was again behind the camera. The interplay between Bronson and Al is sheer genius, and this is highly recommended. He got a role in a Bud Spencer movie, Flatfoot in Hong Kong, in 1975, and then made Vai Gorilla in Italy with Tonino Valeri, starring Fabio Testi. This is a great poliziotesco, also known as The Hired Gun, and has a great score by Franco Bixio and Fabio Frizzi. Al Lettieri only made one other movie, in 1976, called Bordella, a morally and politically incorrect Italian musical comedy directed by Pupa Avati. Sadly, he died from a heart attack in New York in 1975, leaving this small record of his great acting. He was only 47 years old. Not much is known about Al Lettieri, apart from the staggering claim by Marlon Brando that his two Oscar performances were based upon him. If only we knew more about his life. I salute the unstoppable Al Lettieri.